Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavins.
This is brought to you by Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. And do us a favor, if you like the pod, want to support it, go over to Prize Picks like I did last night, sign up. It's very easy. Use the code CLNS and that will help us tremendously. All right, Greg, let's start off with the Patriots and the number three pick. Burt Breer came out, said that the Patriots have zero appetite, according to teams that have talked to them, especially around the combine, zero appetite to move on from that third pick. What have you heard about the Patriots being open-minded and their willingness to maybe deal on down from number three?
Yeah, from what I understand from Burt's report, the genesis of this was the Falcons, and I think it was at the combine, maybe sort of in their, you know, evaluation of what to do at the quarterback position. They checked into how willing teams were in the top three to trade out, and at that time, they all said, including the Patriots, said that they weren't interested. Now, I certainly understand why the Falcons would do that. They went on to, you know, give Kirk Cousins a boatload of money. So they decided, they looked at all their options and they said, in essence, there's not a great percentage that we're going to be able to trade into the top three, even if we wanted to, or at least that's the way it looks right now. So we're going to go the Kirk Cousins route. Do I think that necessarily means the Patriots are dead set against trading the number three pick? No, I just talked to a personnel executive last night on a team that doesn't really need a quarterback, but sort of in the course of our discussion, I know this executive, I know him for a long time. He has a good feel for the quarterbacks. Every team definitely looks at all the quarterbacks, and this organization wasn't to the point where, they had done their second sort of go around, their more serious look at the quarterbacks. I don't think that the Patriots are anywhere near done with their quarterback evaluations. So could things change by the time the draft starts? Yes. But again, I still think, and you look at the way this offseason has gone, I think it's highly likely, more probable than not, certainly, that the Patriots stick at three and take a quarterback. Or the other thing that I've heard more of is perhaps a short trade back, say five or six or something like that, and then they take the quarterback. But again, I think that as of where it stands right now, and this is before pro days, before the dinner, before the pro days, before the top 30 visits, the three Zoom calls that prospects can have with each team. I think as of right now, they are more probable than not taking a quarterback at three and going from there.
Yeah, and we're going to see a lot of these reports, Greg, over the next several weeks about these quarterbacks having conversations with teams. Jordan Schultz today at Bleacher Report reporting that J.J. McCarthy visited the Giants last week. He had dinner with the front office, a tour of the facility. The Commanders are flying out to Ann Arbor to have dinner Thursday night with McCarthy, the night before his pro day. We're going to have a lot of these reports, and they don't necessarily mean that the team is landing on that guy, so just be ready to see that over and over and over again. All right, let's talk about the offensive line. Mike Owenu, reportedly going to be this team's right tackle. Your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't say that's a huge surprise given, you know, the contract that they gave him. Not to say that you can't have a guard that makes $19 million. I mean, Shaq Mason was one of the, if not the highest paid guard in the league for the Patriots. but I think that certainly Mike has been upping his training at right tackle, something that he hadn't done. I still think at the end of the day, and I think there's another report, I think Doug Kide reported that the team views Chuck Okorafor as a possible starter at left tackle. I think that everything is on the table going into this year. They will certainly take a look at a lot of people. Remember, there's an entirely, not only a new offensive coaching staff, entirely new offensive line coaching staff with Scott Peters and Robert Kugler. So these guys, all they've done is study things on film. These guys are known as teachers, technicians. I can't tell you how excited I am. And again, look, we'll have to see if these guys are any good. I know people who know Kugler really well, who think a lot of him, think he's a future coaching star. Peters, you know, his background leads you to believe that he could be successful at training for 4 years under Bill Callahan, who's the best line coach in the league, certainly makes you believe that he has a lot of potential. But then again, the Browns had the opportunity just to turn it over to him when Callahan followed his son to the Titans, and they didn't do that. So yeah, that should give you a little bit of pause. But in general, about the offensive line, I think they have certainly set themselves up where they have a ton of options on both sides of the line, all over the line. I mean, when you look at it, you know, Calvin Anderson was a guy they brought in last year who evidently had some sort of serious illness that took him out of play. We don't know where he is. I know that in my evaluation of him coming in, I thought he was more of a swing tackle guy. But I think all these guys, whether it's Calvin Anderson, Okorafor, Tyrone Wheatley, who we didn't see a whole, we didn't see much of last year at all after the late trade, he certainly has a lot of physical tools that under the right coach, maybe he has potential. Vedarian Lowe, we have seen him some at left tackle. You have Connor McDermott, you have Andrew Stuber, Owenu. Those are all sort of like right tackle types. So, you know, you have City So could start at right guard instead of Owenu. I just think they have a lot of options. Now it's going to be who takes to the coaching, who improves enough, and then, you know, when they get to it's time to play, they'll make a decision.
No doubt they have a lot of options. My question is, are they good options? I'm not super comfortable with the idea of Okorafor being this team starting left tackle. If they get to that point, then I think you mishandled the situation at that position, which is a critical position. Okorafor has played, I think, two snaps at the NFL level at left tackle. He's been strictly a right tackle for all intents and purposes at the NFL level. In college, he played left tackle. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of that, but that was years ago. So I would not be comfortable with this plan of Okorafor left tackle and Owenu right tackle, because we still don't know if Owenu is going to be the same kind of player at right tackle as he was at right guard. So that's kind of an unknown. Okorafor being your starting left tackle would be an unknown. And I don't think that's a good situation to have both of your tackle spots being question marks as you walk in. As far as Wheatley, he's interesting because, of course, he's from Cleveland. And he was off their practice squad last year. Scott Peters was in Cleveland. So you have to imagine Peters has a lot of intel on him. And maybe you get something out of Wheatley Jr. because of that connection. Let's jump to wide receiver, Greg.
Wait, one more thing on that, Nick, before we jump ahead. Just to sort of button up sort of the Tyron Smith stuff. I think, you know, both of us would have preferred that Tyron Smith came in for a year, because we also have to remember that it's very probable that the Patriots, at least within the first three rounds, are going to draft a tackle. Now, you know, whether that guy starts at right tackle or left tackle or what, we'll have to see. We know this draft class is very deep. And, you know, according to the, you know, Ron Wolf way, basically you get somebody to plug in for like a year while you get the rookie trained up to take their place and be better. I just think at the end of the day, and look, I don't think this is an indictment on the Patriots. It's just like where they are. Tyron Smith, I think we a lot of us would have loved him to be there, even with all his physical ailments and things like that. But and we've talked about this before, when you're dealing with aging veterans, you know, and Smith even talked about it, that, you know, Aaron Rodgers appealed to him. He thought that they had a chance to win. He's never had much postseason success with Dallas. I just don't think a team like the Patriots, where they are right now, was appealing to him at all. And I don't think it's simply like you overpay him. I don't ever subscribe to that. I know plenty of people do, but I just don't think where Smith is in his career, I don't think he would consider the Patriots. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. That's just the way things go a lot of time with these aging veterans.
It's a very difficult sell job. And when you start to put all of the things together, all the factors, right? Family life, financially, the taxes, the cost of living, the weather. Boston is not necessarily sexy, unfortunately, for a lot of these players. And people go, oh, well, New York City, look, we can disagree because we're local, right? But if you're a free agent, we've heard this time and time again, New York City has that ring to it. I'm going to go play in New York City, even if you're not playing exactly in the city. You get the point. And so you start to look at all of these things, the fact that they were a 4-win team last year. There's so many questions about what they're going to be offensively. You don't have a quarterback right now, aside from Jacoby Brissett, that you can sit there and say, okay, well, he's going to be an NFL-level guy. Gerard Mayo's a first-time head coach. And people will say, oh, all of these are excuses. No, they're reasons. These are life decisions, folks, okay? If you're Tyron Smith and you're 33 years old and you have maybe 1 year left in your career, you're going to go play at New York City with a team that should be a playoff team if the quarterback is healthy, to go play with a future Hall of Fame quarterback at Aaron Rodgers? Or are you going to take, you know, more money to go play in New England for a team that doesn't have a, you know, bona fide QB1 with all of these other questions? It's a life decision. So could the Patriots have dumped $15 million guaranteed on Smith? Maybe. But I agree with you, Greg. I'm not one of those people. We agreed on the Ridley thing. Like, you have to draw a line at some point. I do have a question for you, though, about Jonah Williams. I think it was Burt, but I'm not sure because there's just so much being said right now.
Right.
The Patriots saw Jonah Williams more as a right tackle, and that's why they weren't necessarily in love with him. Is that what you've heard? Have you heard anything about Jonah in that situation?
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. And in my evaluation of him, and including, you know, the Bengals' evaluation of him, remember, he was in their building. They trained him up. He played left tackle. But then they, I forget what they did. I think they signed somebody to start. It was the guy from the Chiefs. They signed him to big money to come in and play left tackle because they didn't think Jonah Williams was good enough. And they moved him to right tackle, and there was that whole thing. And he's fine. But, I mean, if you're the Patriots and you say, well, you know, Michael Wenu can be a starting right tackle for us, well, why are we going to bring in another starting right tackle? And, you know, we did talk about Jonah Williams and talk about, like, at least he has the potential to play left tackle, and that's certainly true. But I think at the end of the day, all of these evaluations that the Patriots are making are, all right, what do we have in the building, and how much better is this guy that we might be bringing in? If it's not a big leap, they're not going to do it. I think they saw Calvin Ridley as a big leap, and certainly probably the only guy in free agency that represented a chance to be wide receiver one. I will tell you, related to this, when I was talking to that league executive last night, I brought up Calvin Ridley and sort of what that pursuit might mean for Elliott Wolf and the Patriots. And this guy knows Elliott Wolf really well. And I almost didn't get the sentence out when I talked about Ridley, when he said that contract was ridiculous. Quote, the rest of the league is laughing at that contract. So that's sort of what you're talking about with, like, a line in the sand. I mean, I think the Patriots were willing to go to like $40 million guaranteed, which is, you know, fine. It's still really rich for that player. But to go $50 million guaranteed, I just think was a bridge way too far for the Patriots. And I don't blame them for that. I don't even care how much money they have and burning cash and stuff like that. Like, you're building a program, and you can't just, and you made You made the you had the metaphor last week about, you know, buying a car. It's the same sort of thing. I mean, you're not going to overpay for something just because you have the money. I mean, even rich people don't do that. Rich people stay rich because most of them are pretty cheap. So
just to close the book on this one, Orlando Brown Jr. was the guy who signed with Cincinnati that we were looking for. Any thought about a Charles Leno, somebody like that, who you could bring in as maybe the bridge tackle?
Possible. And here's the other thing about, because, and we'll talk about this, I think, as we go on a little bit with the wide receiver, but we, you know, might as well tackle it now.
I see what you did.
Certainly, certainly there are three glaring holes on this roster. Quarterback, wide receiver one, and left tackle. Quarterback, they're almost definitely getting in the draft. Whatever you think about that, it's going to happen. We don't know when that player is going to play. Could be immediately, could be halfway, could be year two. But that's the path they're going down. As far as left tackle, I just think every team in the league is looking for tackles, both left and right. There's just no inventory. The players that are out there aren't any good. They all have their warts. You know, I think the Patriots have made their evaluations for now. If somebody else comes up, I think they will pursue that. Somebody that they do see as a big upgrade, a more of a, this guy can definitely start at left tackle for us. I just don't think any of those guys are out there. And, you know, the hodgepodge of guys that they have, if they don't do anything, then they think those guys have a chance to do that with much better coaching this year. Wide receiver one, I think, and I think we might have talked about this last week, and my conversation with this league executive last night only reinforced it. I think I would be surprised, and I'll be quite frankly disappointed, if Elliott Wolf doesn't trade for a wide receiver one between now and the draft, or maybe draft weekend, whether it's, you know, Cortland Sutton or Brandon Ayuk's out there right now. A lot of talk about him. Deebo Samuel, DK Metcalf, guys who might be available at some point in time. And remember, the draft might dictate, might put more guys on the market. I would be surprised, because I do think there's that avenue. To me, it would have to be for a future pick, even if it's a future first. I don't really care. But I do think I would be surprised if the Patriots don't trade for a wide receiver one at some point this offseason. And to me, things look a lot different if the Patriots do that. And I think that's just the way I think things might play out.
You know, I kind of have an evolving opinion regarding, and we'll talk about KJ Osborne in a minute and what he brings to the table, but I have an evolving opinion about trading for a top-tier wide receiver that might be out there in the trade market. I'm actually okay with it, as long as you're not sacrificing more than, you know, a pick from this year's draft. If you told me that you're trading number 34 for T. Higgins or number 34 for Ayuk and maybe another pick in 2025, I'd be okay with that. I don't like the idea of investing multiple picks from this draft into a wide receiver like that, because you have too many things to address. So in my eyes, like if it's a second round pick this year, if it's number 34 in a day three pick in 2025, I'll do that deal, because what I'm doing essentially is I'm picking that player at 34 and I know what I have. And if I'm willing to pay the money with Calvin Ridley, I'm willing to pay more money for a guy that I think is better, like Ayuk or T. Higgins. I'll give that guy $22, $23 million a year with the $45 million guarantee or whatever it's going to take. Like, I'm okay with that. But when we talk about, well, we'll trade for Ayuk with a second round and a fourth round pick from this year's draft, that's when I get a little queasy about it, Greg. If it's just a simple number 34 in future considerations, I'm down. Anything more than that with this year's draft, I'm out.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, that's why I would much rather keep this draft intact and give a future pick, even if it's a future one for a wide receiver one. Now, I probably wouldn't go that far with Cortland Sutton. Maybe that's a second rounder. I mean, Cortland Sutton, in terms of what you would have to give up and his contract, which is $13.5 million a year, I would prefer that. I think Courtin Sutton is dynamite. I think if people if they haven't seen him play, I think he's extremely good. But I agree with you. And plus the draft is so rich with wide receivers now. I would rather target and make sure this new staff picks out the guy that they want and just draft him at 34 and you have him for, you know, 4+ years. Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. This week on Prize Pick, I'm selecting Stephen Curry for more than 29 points, Caitlin Clark for more than 30 points. Yeah, you can cross streams, cross sports, all that stuff. LeBron James, more than 7 assists. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Make sure you use promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Let's move on to KJ Osborne. He's in the mix, 1-year deal, $4 million on the base. He can make up to $6 million. What'd you make of this signing?
Like KJ Osborne. Good, solid receiver. They're sort of getting a guy who just, even though he was still productive, I mean, he averaged, last 3 years, he averaged 5 touchdowns a year, about 600 yards. And you're talking about in an offense with, you know, Justin Jefferson and in recent years, Jordan Addison. And, you know, he still find a way to be productive. Now, his drops for some reason went up a lot last year. He was mostly around 2% drop rate to all of a sudden last year it was 6.7.
Yeah.
So that would have to be investigated and corrected. But to me, he's more like a number 3, number 4 receiver, really good teammate, really good in the room. People really like him, the coaches. And you know, whenever the Patriots do something like this, you look at the depth chart and see who they might replace. And to me, it's very clearly he would be a Juju Smith-Schuster replacement. I think that they are very similar in terms of inside-outside versatility. At the base, they're probably both sort of bigger slot receivers, but a little bit of versatility to go down the field. KJ Osborne is a much better athlete at this point in time. Certainly what we saw from Juju last year with his knee and everything. You know, I think this is about the way the Patriots are doing this. This is about slowly upgrading the roster. Any spot that you can get and get a chance to upgrade it. To me, this is an upgrade over what they had last year with Juju Smith-Schuster. We'll have to see whether the team agrees and parts ways with Smith-Schuster at some point in time.
I said this yesterday on my pod, and the pod is popping, if you're wondering. Nick Cattle Show, big-time numbers last week for free agency. Nick Cattle Show on YouTube if you want to check it out. If you don't get enough Patriots talk between Greg and I tend to think about a lot of things football-wise similar to Greg. So if you like this, you can check out that pod as I also talk about other Boston sports. But I said this yesterday. I feel like we're now at the point already about a week in where people are just, they're not happy with pretty much anything. If it's not a number one receiver, if it's not a starting left tackle, this guy sucks. And I just, I hate that part of it because you have other parts of the roster that you need to upgrade and you need to fill. So KJ Osborne, to me, I like it. I like the signing. He's insurance for Juju. He's insurance for Kendrick Bourne coming off of an ACL. He's an upgrade over pretty much anybody that you had in that room other than, you know, maybe Pop for a stretch and Kendrick before his injury. And this is going to be, I think, maybe an unpopular opinion. And Greg, I don't know if you agree with this or not. A lot of people are saying, oh, the Patriots are worse than they were last year. They haven't gotten any better. In my estimation, they have upgraded at quarterback, given the level of play you got last year from Mack and Bailey. They have upgraded at tight end because I think Austin Hooper is better than Farrow Brown and Hunter is Hunter. And I think they've upgraded in the wide receiver room because you have effectively now replaced Devontae Parker with KJ Osborne. And I think Osborne is better right now than Parker is. So it might seem a little crazy to people, but you can look at this first week of free agency and say they upgraded at quarterback, they upgraded at tight end, and they upgraded at wide receiver. And if you look at it in that way, it's not the worst start as some people are trying to frame it as.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, and we'll talk a lot about, and we have talked a lot about the Packers way and how the Patriots are doing things. And, and we might as well get into it now because, I got into it the other night on TV with Bert and Felger. And, and again, I just want to say this from the start. Just because I'm explaining the thought process behind what I think they are doing. And again, nobody from the inside has told me exactly what they are doing. Perhaps we get into that more next week when the league meetings are going on and Kraft should be there. I don't know if Wolf will be there. Mayo will certainly be there. When Ron Wolf started with the Packers, and I went through his book, I read it really quickly, The Packer Way. And certainly I really wanted to see like how he rebuilt things with the Packers and not even rebuilt. That was a team for the previous 20 years. I think they had made one playoff appearance. It was, the Lambeau was half filled. They were not the Lombardi Packers anymore. That was a long time in the rear view. And they brought Ron Wolf in and he basically started towards the end of 1991 and just evaluated the team. And that team ended up being 4-12. We know this year's team was 4-13.
Yep.
They dismissed the head coach, ended up bringing in Mike Holmgren. The Patriots dismissed Bill Belichick. They ended up promoting Gerard Mayo. And so, Elliot Wolf and it was in a similar situation to his dad. And the first thing that his dad did was he evaluated the team. And I know people feel passionately about certain things, and it's hard for them to take a step back and look at things. They just see 4-13, they suck, blah, blah, blah. Like, you can't – there's a lot of context and a lot of circumstances that go into a team being 4-13. I mean, I think if you polled anyone before the season, I think 5% of people might have thought the Patriots would have won like 3 or 4 games last year. That they sunk to 4-13 was a huge surprise to people. Now, I think a lot of things went into that. Certainly the quarterback play, the switch in kicker, the coaching dysfunction, which was clear, issues with Belichick. So the point is, Ron Wolf went in and looked at the Packers, and they were 4-12. And he came away saying, we were better than our record indicated. There was more talent than our record indicated. Of course, I say that about the Patriots, and people think I'm crazy. But, and then what he did was he just figured out, all right, which are the good parts on this team that I'm going to keep, and who do I need to get out of the building that maybe don't want to work as hard, maybe don't have the team first ethic that we want. And they went about keeping the good parts and upgrading the bad parts. And Ron Wolf saw a team that was 4-12 that really should have been more around 500 if they had better coaching and things like that. I'm sorry. I'm not going to apologize for saying that if the Patriots had the ability to get better quarterback play, take care of the ball, a kicker who made kicks. I mean, that team should have been 2 or 3 games better last year at the basis, just if they didn't turn the ball over and they made some kicks, let alone they lose Christian Gonzalez. They lose Matthew Judon. They got what people leave out is like there was like no offensive line coaching last year, which was the crux of everything that was wrong with the offense. Adrian Clem was a bad hire, which we said from the beginning. Then he was gone midway through the year with the health situation that he was dealing with. I'm sure I don't understand why it's such a stretch to say if you bring in more cohesive offensive coaching, more better offensive line coaching, you get Gonzalez and Judon back, and you take care of the ball and the kicker makes some more kicks. I don't see why it's unreasonable to think, depending on what happens at the quarterback position, obviously, but just look at Jacoby Brissett. Last time he was in this offense, 2002, when he started a lot, he was eighth in the league in QBR. Like, it's not like he was some bum when he was in Cleveland. Now, the record wasn't that good because they had a god-awful defense that they ended up bringing in Jim Schwartz to fix, which he did last year. But I don't understand why it's such a stretch to say this team last year was better than the record indicated, and that just addition by subtraction, mostly, and small improvements, that they can't get a lot better, be around, at least, you know, start the conversation at 6-7 wins. I don't understand why that's so crazy.
I'm going to try to bridge the gap from you and I think others that might be going bananas when you say that. I think the problem is this. People look at the team last year and they say, well, Greg, yes, they were a four-win team because of the things that you pointed out. The fact that they couldn't take care of the football, the quarterback play. So they were what they were at the end of the day. Here's how I'll put it. This is how I see it. If you are not a complete disaster on special teams, and if you had an average offense, then you could talk me into believing that that team wins seven games at least last year. So that's where you look at. And that's why I don't understand why people are freaking out about bringing back Anthony Jennings and Josh Uche and the good players from this team. Bring back the good players. You need a foundation, folks. You're not going to get a superstar at every spot, especially given where you are right now. So you brought back your good offensive players. Again, I think you upgraded the wide receiver room, the tight end room, the quarterback room. You still have the draft. You still have several weeks before the draft. And as Greg said, you know, look, we could be talking about a completely different team in 10 days. If they go out and sign Charles Leno as a bridge left tackle and trade for Brandon Ayuk, everybody's doing jumping jacks for the most part about this offseason. And then you just go get your quarterback in the draft, right? So that's how I look at this team. If you got an average offense last year and you didn't have a kicker puking on himself, then you win seven games. So, and that's the entire offense, not just the quarterback plays, the drop passes, it's everything that we saw. So I just think that Elliot Wolf in the front office and Jerod Mayo are telling us that, because what they're doing is they're keeping this defense intact. They're saying we are a top 10 DVOA defense if we give you at least average / decent offense this year, and we don't make the kinds of mistakes we made on special teams, then we will be competitive and win, you know, at least 6 or 7 games and take that small step of the improvement. So I think people just have a very difficult time looking at it, Greg, and saying, oh, well, if they were average offense, because they'll say, well, they weren't an average offense. Obviously, we all know that. But what Elliot Wolf's looking at is, man, we had a disastrous situation at quarterback. We couldn't get out of our way offensively. Kicker couldn't make kicks. We had 7 dudes that were devoted to special teams on our roster. If we just improve, even if it's just a little bit, on offense and special teams, and we stay, if not improve defensively, then we should be in a much better spot than we were in 2023. And I don't think it's an outrageous thing to say. I think people wanted the leaps this year, Greg. They wanted the immediate, oh my God, they just brought in, you know, top tier left tackle. They just brought in Calvin Ridley. They just, you know, hit a home run in the draft. And here we go. We're looking at a 10-win team. And I just, given the situation, the circumstances, probably unreasonable.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It would be sort of the approach that the Titans are taking. And look, I understand that. I understand that the fans, after what's happened the last 3 or 4 years, don't have a lot of patience anymore. And I understand that. I just think that, and again, this is an endorsement. I'm just going off past history, whether it was Ron Wolf or Ted Thompson and Brian Gutekunst. And I know the last two, the circumstances are different because they had franchise quarterbacks and they got the next guy ready and all that stuff. I understand all that. I'm not an idiot. But Ron Wolf restarted the Packers and they went from 4-12 to 9-7 to, you know, I think they had 3 years of 9-7 and, you know, they were in the playoffs every year. They just kept running into that buzzsaw Cowboys team. You know, they quickly rebuilt. It wasn't flashy. But it was a way to sustainable success. Now, I just want to read a couple things. And I did this column on Boston Sports Journal. If you remember
I want to cut Greg off for a second because Greg's going to talk about his column and people are going to say he's going to pump his own tires. Oh, he's, and this is, I'm friends with Greg. I respect Greg professionally. I'm not saying this to blow smoke or to get subscriptions at BSJ. I thought this was great work by you. Going back, taking excerpts from the book, I think if anybody has the time, go read this because it is absolutely worth the time. And Greg will talk about it a little bit here, but the comparisons between the Wolf days, even if people don't want to talk about the 90s, and kind of what we've seen already in this offseason, you can see. I just wanted to jump in and say that. I thought it was tremendous work, and it's well worth the read.
Thanks. I just, you know, one thing I wanted to say at the top is like, and I hear that. I even hear this from BSJ members. You know, first of all, they don't want to hear about the Packer way anymore. I understand. I'm just, there's a void of information or an explanation. I'm trying to do my best to tell the members and the readers and the listeners of this, like, you know, what I think is going on. And I understand you don't want to hear from an organization that has won 2 Super Bowls over the span of this 30 years, where the Patriots have won 6 Super Bowls over 20 years. You know, I get it. I mean, can we all agree? Can we all be grown-ups and agree that what happened with the Patriots with Brady was unique and it's never going to happen again? And it, you know, and it's funny because when I covered the Packers in 2007 to 2010, like I used to have to do these chats with Packers. We used to have a thing called Packers Insiders at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. One of my post-game duties was doing post-game chats with Packers fans. And this is at the height of, you know, 2007 when I came in. Yeah, they ended up going to the NFC Championship game. But that was the third year of the Ted Thompson rebuild, and it wasn't working for a while, and people were mad. And these people, you know, they compare everything to Mike Holmgren and Lombardi. So I understand the context. But can we agree that the way the Packers have done things, yeah, it might not be the Patriots way or the Patriots success, which no one has ever done, certainly in the salary cap era, pretty damn good. I mean, outside of the Mike Sherman complete debacle by Barb Harlan, like going from Ron Wolf to Mike Sherman as head coach and general manager, which was an epic disaster that led to Ted Thompson. Their success from when Ron Wolf started the rebuild, I think they are third in wins and fifth in playoff victories over the last like 30 years. So, you know, we're not talking about league average. We're talking about pretty good. So in any event, I went through the book and I skimmed for the best, the most important parts, certainly about rebuilding a team. A couple things I just wanted to read to people and see if this sounds familiar or looks to what the Patriots are doing. This is Ron Wolf, excuse me. I broke down the team. I was pleasantly surprised by some of what I had discovered, but I soon realized the huge task that lay ahead. We were more competitive than our record indicated, which I think you could say about the Patriots losing 8 games by 1 score or less last year, even being a complete debacle on offense at quarterback and kicker. But we were far from being very good. We had a core of talented players who could carry us and make us presentable while we went about improving the overall quality. You could certainly say that about the defense, and what they've done so far tells you, hey, let's keep the defense intact, bring back our guys, and that's going to give us a chance. Again, Ron Wolf. Instead of wreaking wholesale havoc on the roster, I concluded we could make selective changes. My intention was clear. Keep the players I respected the most. Give them as much help as possible during the ensuing offseason. Kind of hard with today's league rules. And at the same time, beginning adding younger players who eventually could step in as their replacements and dramatically raise the quality of the product. It was a two-tiered approach that would allow us to be competitive soon, while also setting the stage to get much stronger in the future period. I think that's about it. But there's a whole bunch more in the column. But I just think this is context for what the Patriots are doing. And I don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's cheap. I think they think this is a proven method that works. And history is on their side.
All right, I got 2 more things I want to talk about with Greg. But first, I want to let you know again that the episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today. Use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Let's jump back to the draft here because we didn't get to this earlier. Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft today. May goes 2, Daniels goes 3. How you feeling about that?
I would be excited about that. Again, the league executive that I talked to last night, who knows a thing or two about quarterbacks, he was like, well, you know, first of all, Caleb Williams is going number one, forget him. He's like, and I asked him about the other two, and the first thing he mentioned was, he's like, that Jaden Daniels boy, he can play. And, you know, there's certainly a lot to like about Drake May. I would be, if the Patriots have conviction on either of those two guys and they end up with them, then I'm fine with that. And it's all about, you know, how you train them up. And that's another thing this league executive said. You know, it's vital that you have the coaching. And you could look at, you know, related back to Ron Wolf. He started, and one of his big things, and this is one thing that I think Patriots fans will take solace in, Ron Wolf was not a believer in, let me build up the roster and any quarterback, I could get league average quarterback and he'll lead us to a Super Bowl title as long as he does not believe in that. He believes you absolutely need a great quarterback. He thought Brett Favre was that, even though he was a disaster in Atlanta, brought him in, got him great coaching with Mike Holmgren, and the rest was history for the Packers. I think the Patriots are looking for greatness. I think both of these guys have greatness in them. I think May might be greatness delayed, but he reminds me a little bit of Favre in terms of being undisciplined, but a lot of talent there. We'll see if the competitiveness is there as well. But I'm at the end of the day, if they have conviction on whoever's at 3 and they have a solid plan for him, a good plan and good coaching, and I do think that's an X factor with this whole thing, you know, about me talking about improvement. Is Jerod Mayo good enough?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is Alex Van Pelt, Ben McAdoo, the QB coach who's never coached QBs, are these guys good enough? I don't know. But if they are, then I think the Patriots are okay no matter who they choose.
How do you feel about McCarthy, by the way? How much work have you done on him? Do you see it?
Not a ton. May's certainly the guy I've done the most work on, and I will probably after the league meetings. That's when, you know, pretty much everybody deep dives into the draft. I will say I like the package that McCarthy presents. I mean, if you're comparing him to, say, Mac Jones, I think McCarthy has a much stronger arm. I think he's got some snap on his ball. I was not dismayed by his combine workout. I know a lot of people like to rag on him about it. To me, it was more about the wide receivers, like that guy, Adonai Mitchell or something that people are high on in the draft.
AD Mitchell, I love AD Mitchell.
Okay. But I'll just tell you, he was a disaster in the combine drills. When he was running routes, like to me, he was more at fault for the errant throws from a lot of guys than the quarterbacks were. But I don't know if I mean, I haven't watched him that much. But I do think that McCarthy, there's an X factor to him. There's a mobility. There's a toughness. Now, my big question is, and this is what teams have to answer, is, you know, we know he was on a really good team, sort of like Brady in the early Patriots dynasty, where it was, you know, really good defense. Run the ball a lot, but he never had to carry a team. And are you comfortable with a franchise quarterback that you don't know whether he can handle carrying a team or not? He can certainly, but there's a lot to like about J.J. McCarthy. I don't know about top five, but a lot to like.
I find it very fascinating. I'm not telling you that McCarthy won't succeed. He might end up being really good. I don't know. Watching him this year, I didn't see it. But I also understand that Michigan didn't ask a ton of him. So it's fascinating to me because you have one guy in Drake May who was borderline lights out in 2022 when he had a little bit more talent and an offensive scheme that fit him a little bit better. And then in 2023, May didn't have that kind of team. And so I just wonder if you put Drake May on Michigan, are there people dragging Drake May? I mean, if you put McCarthy, right. I saw May have to try to carry a team. And he had some down moments, obviously, but he had some very good moments. I can't tell you how many times North Carolina wide receivers dropped footballs where that dude put it where it's supposed to be. So I just find it interesting. Like, if McCarthy was put in that situation at North Carolina, what would the narrative be surrounding him? I don't know what it would be, but I've right. seen May face the adversity. I haven't seen J.J. McCarthy have to face much adversity. He was on a really good team that had a really good coach. So I think that's a question. At least I've seen May have to deal with crap around him. I just want to ask you one more question, because you kind of brought up Mayo. You touched on it a little bit, but you had a note today on the rundown that you're more concerned about Mayo than the personnel direction. You described why personnel wise you feel that way, but how concerned are you about Mayo right now?
Well, I don't know if concerned is the right word. It might be. It's more just like I just think he's a complete unknown. Again, to relate this to the Packers, one thing, and I do think Ron Wolf was ahead of the curve on this, and you could look at it and say, this is a reason why the Packers have had so much success. Ron Wolf believed in offensive head coaches. He had done studies and said that there's a more likelihood for success. And we've talked about it over the years about how, certainly over the last year, about if they moved on from Belichick, like, I wanted an offensive head coach because I didn't want the offensive coordinator to go anywhere. And that's usually what happens as soon as a defensive head coach has success, if his offensive coordinator gets a head coaching job. Now, is Alex Van Pelt ever going to appeal to somebody as a head coach? Probably not. So maybe it works out that way. But I just have no idea, like, what Jerod Mayo is going to be as a head coach. Can he lead a room? Yeah. Do I think he's changed the atmosphere inside one Patriot place? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to be able to motivate the players? Yeah. But I have no idea what he's going to do in terms of game situations. And, you know, one thing that Wolf talked about when he picked Holmgren, he wanted a coach that came from success, had a track record of success, and so that and was a winner. That you knew he was a winner. Now, you might be able to say Jerod Mayo's a winner based on his playing career. He was never a Super Bowl champion on the field. He was hurt. But certainly a great player here. There's no question about that. But when the shit hits the fan, which it's going to at some point in time, and if this team starts 0-4, how are the players going to look at Jerod Mayo? Yeah. Are they going to follow him? And can he come and say, you need to follow me for this reason? Or are they going to say, this guy just got the job because the owners love him? Like, and he and he's a yes man for the owners. He's a puppet for the owners. Like, does that stuff start coming up? And so I just think it's more of like, if I just think that Mayo's an unknown commodity when it comes to a head coach. His coaching staff is an unknown commodity. Alex Van Pelt calling plays, the quarterback's coach, Tyler Hughes coaching wide receivers. Is he even better than Troy Brown or what have you? Like, I just think the coaching staff is a big unknown. And I think, just like sort similar to last year, where I think the coaching staff was the reason why they underachieved, I think the personnel direction will be in a good place. But do I think that could be ruined by a coaching staff that's not good enough? Yeah, I do.
All right. If you want more from Greg, check him out at BSJ along with Mike Giardi and the crew. $50 for the year. They do a fantastic job. We'll be back later on this week, depending on what happens. If there's big breaking news, Greg and I will be back this week. If there's not big breaking news, then Greg has a special interview lined up for you guys coming up later on in the week. So everybody be well, be safe, be healthy. Until next time, it's the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavett.